Good morning, Steve Dale on WGN. Steve Dale's Pet World. Happy Passover. Happy Easter. A holiday like I'm sure you've never had before, but nevertheless, still Passover, still Easter. And as we can, we should be celebrating. I'll be celebrating a life on this show. Also, we lost Dr. Peter Sakis, one of the great veterinarians in Chicago to COVID-19. One of the great veterinarians in the country, really, when it comes to birds, bird health, and also rescuing dogs and cats. There was no one like Dr. Sakis. I'll be talking to his brother Bill, his daughter, Dr. Courtney Sakis, as well. And also, I have an audience of mostly pet parents, but veterinarians and veterinary professionals certainly listen to this program. And you know this name, Dr. Scott Weis, professor at Ontario's Veterinary College, an infectious disease specialist, but he is the guy, wormsandgermsblog.com, that you probably get up in the morning and you go to that blog. And in times like these, I'm honored to have you on the show, Dr. Weis, because you are one of a handful of people on the planet that we want to go to. You are the pet's version of Dr. Anthony Fauci, I think. So thank you very much for being here. And I will start off with the question that repeatedly over and over. And just, I mean, I think people are so concerned about this. You get up in the morning and you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know the news that you're going to hear. And then you hear about a couple of big cats, one tiger in particular. But now also, so these lions are even coughing that live next door to the tigers, and there's three tigers that live together. Two of the tigers are symptomatic, I believe. Oh my gosh, what about my cat at home? So can you explain first off what is known about the big cats?
Well, the big cats, there's a lot we don't know so far, but we know there was one that was confirmed as being infected with this virus. And there were some other tigers and lions that had similar signs. Fairly mild disease, coughing and the like. It's not easy to test tiger, right? We can't just walk up and say, here, open your mouth, I'm going to take a swab. So those are done under general anesthesia, so they only tested the one. The assumption is the other ones were probably infected as well. And the assumption is they were infected by someone that works there who wasn't sick at that point, so an asymptomatic person or asymptomatic carrier. Now, there's a lot of details we're still waiting to hear about, what kind of contacts they had, but it's a typical story that this is a human virus that will make the odd jump in animals. And it happened to do it in a rather unusual species, being a tiger, but tigers are cats, and cats are a species that we know have some degree of susceptibility to this virus.
And we think we know that. I'm going to hedge a little bit for you. But we think we know that based on the fact that COVID-19 is a SARS virus, severe acute respiratory syndrome virus. And from what we know about the SARS virus when SARS happened the first time around, and what we learned, is that we're assuming that is the case for this SARS virus?
Yeah, we've got various pieces of evidence that come together to show us the cats and the ferrets or another species we're concerned about. So if we look back to the original SARS virus, it didn't cause the problems this one did, obviously, but there was some work done on animals, and it was shown that cats and ferrets could be infected by this virus. And when you infected a cat, that cat could then infect another cat. So they could get infected, and they produced enough virus to be able to pass it on. We don't know at all if that happened in the real world. That was an experimental study, but it showed that cats and ferrets were able to be infected. This virus is very closely related to that other virus, to both SARS viruses. And a virus, to cause an infection, needs to attach to a cell. So it sticks to cells and gets incorporated into the cells. And it does that by receptors. And looking at that virus and looking at different animal species, they can say, okay, this virus uses the same receptor, same type of receptor as the original SARS. And, cats have one that fits really well. People obviously do. Ferrets, a couple different species have receptors that you'd think would fit well. And then a couple other things have expanded on that. So there have been a few cats. A couple cats have been identified in the real world with this virus, as well as a couple dogs. And experimentally, they've shown with cats and ferrets, they can be infected with this virus. Ferrets seem to be quite susceptible to it, and they can produce a lot of virus, and they can pass it ferret to ferret. Cats can also spread it cat to cat, maybe not quite as well as ferrets, but they can be infected, and they can spread it on. So all of those things, and including information about the tigers, makes it, I would say, fairly clear that cats and ferrets are susceptible to some degree. We just don't know how that relates to the real world. We know there are a couple positive animals, but there's been very little study of it so far. It's not easy to test animals in COVID-positive households because we don't want those animals leaving. We don't want the people leaving. And logistically, it's a challenge to go in and sample them. So we've been slow trying to get information on that to see see how big a problem it is. This is a human disease. To see, is there a small component of animals we need to pay attention to?
All right. So I want to jump on some of the things you just said. First of all, it's a human disease. So I want to stress that this is not a feline coronavirus. They have their own coronavirus, but this is not that. This is not a canine coronavirus. It is a human disease. Understanding what you just said. Still understanding what you just said, we have, I don't know, well over a million humans identified as positive for COVID-19. Probably, I don't know, how many do you think? Who knows? We just didn't test. That probably had it as well. And how many of those households have a companion animal? And many of these countries are pet-loving countries, from Italy to Germany to the UK to Scotland to Canada to the United States and on and on. A lot of animals and a lot of households here. We've only heard about a handful. To me, that's good news, really good news.
Yeah, I guess it's a bit mixed. It's good that we're not seeing a major problem. I think that's really, really important to note. The problem is, when you're in a pandemic, when you've got so much human disease and so many limitations on human testing, we get very little animal testing done. So at this point, what we can say is you're absolutely right. This is a human disease. This started in animals, but it's a human disease. And the question we have, is this purely a human disease or is it almost purely a human disease? So is it just human-to-human transmission, in which case we don't need to worry about animals? Or is there some spillover in animals and maybe an animal health component that's probably not huge? Or maybe animals that could spread it back to people? It's probably a very, very small component if it is. But that's why we're looking to see what we can find. And ultimately, whether it's a problem or not, we can take some really simple measures right now to reduce the risk. So with some common sense, I can make sure my dog and cat have absolutely no risk to me in terms of this virus. And the risk is me infecting them.
And the same mostly for cats and for ferrets. It's the humans infecting the animal because the animals, how else would they get it? I mean, it's a human disease, so they must have exposure to a human who has it in order to get it. That would seem to be logical to me. You mentioned ferrets, and then I want to go back to cats and ask you the same question. So for ferrets and cats, that might be, in ways we do not completely understand, more susceptible. Is there any reason in your mind whatsoever to give up these animals because you're concerned that the animals can get it and then give it to another family member, et cetera?
No, there's no reason. That's not going to help. Essentially, so I have dogs and some cats. If my animals are infected, they got it from me or they got it from someone in my house because, I'm socially distancing them like I'm doing with my kids and my spouse. My dog and cats don't encounter other people or other animals, so they can't get this virus. It's not just, coming in the airstream from miles and miles away. It's a close contact virus. So if I socially distance them, there's no way they're going to bring it into the household. And if they ever get it, it's because it went from human to animal in the household, in which case we've already passed amongst ourselves. So that's what I was saying before, these common sense things that we can do. And it's remembering that social distancing means your household, not just the people in the household. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to keep us locked down, but let the dog go run around with 50 dogs at the dog park and a bunch of people pet it. Like, if I wouldn't shake someone's hand right now, I wouldn't want them to pet my dog because they pet my dog and I pet my dog and I touch my nose. That's a very, very, very low risk, but it's still a theoretical risk. And it's easy to say, okay, let's keep our animals away from people. We don't have to worry about it. So we are the big source of this virus for our animals. And what we want to make sure is, we're reducing the number of contacts those animals have with other people because that's our risk.
All right. I appreciate the straight science coming from you. I want to ask you one more thing. IDEXX, a diagnostic lab. So, friends, when you go to the veterinarian and a blood draw happens, that blood is sent out to a diagnostic lab, and that lab may be IDEXX. And they're found around the world, and they've tested, they say, thousands of animals, and not a single positive. What do you think about that?
Well, I guess the results of that have to be put in context. What that means is their test is good. We worry about false positives. So a false positive is a positive result you get in an animal that's not truly positive. And that can happen because of various things and cross-reaction with other viruses. And what that showed is they tested a large number of animals, and they got no false positives. So we can have good confidence in the positive that comes up because we don't have to worry about cross-reaction. It doesn't tell us anything about human-animal transmission, really, because the large number of animals they tested were animals that were in contact with exposed people. So we can't say anything about human-animal transmission if we don't know the animals were exposed to infected people. But it's good that it shows us this test is probably a good quality test. So when we start using it, or if we start using it, we can be confident in the results.
All right. For further information, not only about this issue, but also to keep up with what's happening in veterinary medicine, it is a blog that I go to every single day. Even before this happened, wormsandgermsblog.com. Dr. Scott Weiss, one of the specialists on the planet on this very topic. I know you talk straight science. It can be scary to people if they don't really listen to the words, or in the case of reading your blog, read the words of what you're actually saying. So let me ask you this straight out. Is there any reason whatsoever to even think about giving up your dog, your cat, for that matter, your pet ferret?
No.
There you go.
That's the short answer, and that's the straight answer, yeah.
Okay. Dr. Weiss, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, pet stores are essential businesses, so some are still open. Some are still selling rabbits. Don't buy a rabbit. Don't do that. For Easter, it doesn't make any sense, and I'll explain why in a bit. We will also celebrate the life of veterinarian Dr. Peter Sakis next. Back here, Steve Dale's Pet World, WGN Radio. So sometimes when you get notes on Facebook, you don't want to believe it. So it was Jackie Bang of Channel 9 News, actually, who messaged me on Facebook and said, Steve, have you heard about Peter Sakis? And I said, no. And then she wrote back and said, well, he died of COVID-19. Dr. Peter Sakis, one of Chicago's premier superstar, rock star veterinarians, and one of the nation's best, incidentally, when it comes to treating birds. And then I went to the Facebook page because I still didn't want to believe it. Not that I wouldn't believe Jackie Bang, but I went to the Facebook page and, yeah, sure enough, post after post. And then I began to receive note after note. A rescuer, a good friend of Dr. Peter Sakis, John Garrido, messaged me, and all of these folks did. And I have on the phone right now Dr. Peter Sakis' brother, Bill, daughter, Dr. Courtney Sakis. First of all, I am so sorry, both of you, for your loss, but you're here, and I wanted to talk to you. Because even though Dr. Peter Sakis, that's the doctor that passed away of COVID-19, would have been offended by this conversation, never thinking of himself as a rock star, I think he merits that for what he did in his career, which I'll get to in a moment. Bill, he had COVID-19. I'm told that at one point in time, it seemed he was doing a lot better. And then things went downhill. And I want to talk about that just a bit without going into any personal details, because I think it would be helpful for people to hear that.
Yeah, Courtney might be better with telling you what was going on, because, you know, she was talking to the doctors all the time. But, you know, from what I understand is that, you know, on Friday, Pete was kind of his normal self. You know, he's telling his bad jokes to the nurses and the doctors and, you know, I think he had called a couple people on the phone and texted them, but you know, Courtney was like the swingman on everything that was going on with Pete, and so she kept us all posted on what was going on. So,
well, and also what I didn't make clear is Courtney is, I should have asked you this, because Courtney is really Dr. Sakis. You're a doctor, so you're the right person to ask this question, actually, not only about your dad but about COVID-19 in general. I don't know if you've seen other patients with COVID or not.
But, I have, yeah.
Yeah, so is this typical?
Unfortunately, yeah, it is very typical, and at least what we've been seeing out here where I've been practicing too is, you know, he started with GI symptoms where he just had, you know, nausea, vomiting, and then upset stomach, and he developed a cough. When he went to the hospital, they found that his oxygen saturation was low, meaning that he wasn't pulling enough oxygen into his blood. But they were able to supplement it with, you know, just nasal cannula, some extra air. And these patients seem to do okay for a couple days, and then they crash, and then they crash hard. So he was feeling better, but what we've seen a lot is these people will do okay for, like, up to a week, and then it just takes a turn for the worse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much more detail you want.
No, that's fine. You know, and well, I'm talking to you at the very moment. Your dad was on my radio show on WGN. I don't know, many, many times, probably more than a dozen. Whenever we wanted to talk about birds, he was one of the go-to guys in Chicago. He's one of the go-to guys in the country. And for 23 years, I've been on WGN. And what's amazing to me is you mentioned in an email, and we were talking off the air for a moment, you actually recall coming to WGN radio with your dad.
I do. I do.
Did he enjoy those radio appearances?
Oh, my gosh, of course. Any time he was on the radio, we all had to sit in the car. There was one time I remember when he was on with you guys. Do you remember sitting out in a car in a parking lot and turning to the station and making sure we had to listen to it? Like, he absolutely loved it. It was one of his favorite things.
Well, I don't know that you know or Bill or not, but when it came to avian medicine, there's no doubt that your brother was one of the leaders in America and one of the groundbreakers. Well before there was a specialty for avian medicine or anything like that, he was out there dealing with birds in a very serious way, considering them just like other veterinarians would consider a dog or cat and understanding them and somehow having, I've seen it, somehow having a touch with these animals that with any other veterinarian would have a difficult time with, but somehow they would just settle down with him pretty quickly.
You know, I think you've heard the stories, but I mean, when Pete was a little kid, you know, anytime a bird would fall out of its nest, you know, a little baby bird, it wouldn't have wings or something like that. He'd have the thing inside, you know, he'd have grass in the box. He'd have an eyedropper feeding it. He'd tell us none of us we could touch it because, you know, the mother wasn't going to take it back if it had human hands on this. And I don't know what he is, 12 or 13 years old. You know, he found a bird walking home from caddy and at Evanston Golf Club. And he was all upset that he couldn't help this thing. And the funny thing is, my Aunt Elsie, who's 101 years old, tells me that my dad, when he was a kid, used to bring stray animals in all the time.
Hmm.
I never knew that about my dad until my Aunt Elsie told me that a couple years ago. And, you know, must have got it to Pete, but Pete was, you know, him and my sister had found a little baby rabbit that was abandoned, and they took that thing in, and, you know, it's amazing all the stuff Pete knew about all these animals at a young age, and how, you know, he just took care of them, and, you know, it was just crazy. You know, we had squirrels at my mom's house. He used to knock on the back door waiting for bread. I mean, so we always had these animals around our house, and Pete was always taking care of anything that got distressed. And, you know, he started doing that as a young age. You know, he originally wanted to be an architect. You know, he's always drawn stuff. You know, he still doodles, as Courtney will tell you. But, you know, he used to design golf courses and all this stuff, and he wanted to be an architect. And I think once he found that little bird and he couldn't help it, I think that kind of changed where he wanted to go. And that, you know, at a young age, he wanted to be a vet. And you know, he ended up being a great one. I mean, you know, I remember him telling me that Elizabeth Taylor sent her bird over to the animal hospital in a limousine.
What?
For him to take care of. Yeah.
I never knew that.
No, yeah. When he used to, you know, he won't tell you all that stuff. But, you know, when he worked for Dr. Lefevre, I guess, you know, Elizabeth Taylor used to send her bird there. And then, so she sent it in to see Pete. I don't know if she was in town or she just sent the bird. But this big limousine pulls up and it's Elizabeth Taylor's bird. Coming into the hospital to see Pete. So, you know, you're right. He was, as they say, the man in you know, avian medicine.
He truly was. And you've become a doctor yourself, Courtney.
Yes.
He was brilliant, your dad, very self-effacing. And when he went to school at the University of Illinois, and I didn't know this until recently, he worked on well-being for the profession, even among students. And coming out of all this that's going on, I would suggest well-being is going to be, for your profession, a big issue. Is there something that maybe you learned from your dad that you can take to what you're doing today that isn't specific to medicine but just attitude?
Oh, I mean, I think my entire life I've kind of been watching him and have taken that from him. He just, I mean, he had the biggest heart of anyone you would have ever known. And I think the thing that was best about, or one of the best things about him, or why everyone loved him as a veterinarian so much, is like he was great with the animals, and people can tell you stories about that, but he was also just great with people. Like, he will listen. You know, as much as you're treating the animal, you're also treating the person. Like, the person is worried, that's their beloved pet. This pet comes with a story, and there's also this other person that's worried about them. So he always made sure to take care of both people. And I think people really, like, he went way over time in his appointment slots, literally every day, despite being double booked in all his time slots as well. But he always gave people as much time as they wanted. And I think that's something that I've tried to carry over into my profession as well. As you, I always want to make sure that people are heard. And I think that's one of the most important things, is a lot of times people, like, even, I mean, even though it may not seem relevant, it's important, like, it's important to that person and important to, like, their healing process, that you hear what they have to say and you address whatever concerns they have.
Well, unfortunately, on the radio, I've got to be the bad guy here and cut you off, but just because we're out of time, and only for that reason, I am so sorry about what happened. A profound influence on me, not that I know much about birds, but every little bit I know greatly came from Dr. Peter Sakis. I'm not alone. He was a mentor, I know, for so many pet owners, the bird rescue realm, and so many veterinarians as well. And yes, one of the nicest guys with one of the biggest hearts ever. And I won't even talk about his golf game. Bill Sakis.
You could never beat me in golf.
I was going to ask you, who is the better player? Bill Sakis, thank you so much. And Dr. Courtney Sakis, thank you as well.
Thank you so much.
All right, thanks, Steve.
It is Easter weekend, but please, no bunnies. Next. I know it's Easter weekend, and if you could find a pet store that still sells rabbits, please don't go there. Not for the rabbits anyway. You know, that's just wrong. It's just not fair to make that impulsive decision. There is the Red Door Animal Shelter, and if you think it through, do some research about rabbits, they're right for your household. Check out the Red Door Animal Shelter. Talk to you next week right here, Steve Dale's Pet World.